Good evening, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the FHL Network. We are joined by Alan Axelrod. He is an activist and campaign lead of the No Arm Run Shutoffs, and he's also the co-chair of the Chambana DSA. Hello, Alan. How's it going?
It's going great, James. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm here to explain as much as possible, so feel free to have at it.
Perfect. Thank you. And it's wonderful to have you here. In fact, this is actually the first interview that I'll be having, you know, with the Fred Hampton Leftist Network. And of course, you know, this is going to be our basically flagship interview. So we're very honored to have you. One of the first questions that I have, you know, if you'd explain to our audience, is what is No Arm Run Shutoffs?
No Arm Run Shutoffs is a $0 all-volunteer grassroots effort of 51 member organizations and counting, spanning the entire state of Illinois, north and south, east and west. We have won 4 statewide moratoria on utility shutoffs so far.
Oh, okay, great. So you said the entire state of Illinois. Are you looking to do any growth beyond the state of Illinois, or is it just going to stay limited to that, to the state?
Well, we want to be able to help as many geographies as we can, and have made outreach efforts to activists in Missouri, to activists in Iowa. They have a coalition against utility shutoffs led by Sierra Club. But includes a couple of DSA chapters, which is how I was able to facilitate communication. But also there is a PSL, Party for Socialism and Liberation, led effort in Tennessee that we had a joint strategy meeting with not too long ago.
Oh, okay. All right. So I see there's an expansion that's going on, not just with your state, but also a couple of other states. This is actually a great opportunity because you know, we can use something like this here in Florida. You know, I'm in the state of Florida, as you know. And, you know, typically, you know, with Republican governors like DeSantis, you know, we typically have, it's more of a individualistic type ideology. And so it's like, well, you know, if you guys are in dire straits, it's your own fault. And yeah, so this is one of the reasons why I think something like what you're doing is integral to places like Florida, especially places like Florida, Texas, Alabama, a lot of these other states, of course, including, you know, what they call blue states as well, because I think, if I'm correct, Governor Pritzker is a Democrat, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so yeah, definitely places like New York and California, if they don't have this same type of program, especially people who are advocating for the power outages to not have power outages for people who can't control the situation that they're in, especially since we're in COVID. Regarding No Arm Run Shutoffs, what is the primary driving force for you to take up this cause?
Well, I actually myself received a utility shutoff notice in July and realized that I could afford to be on credit card debt long enough for me to pay it off, but that wasn't a luxury a lot of people had. And so at that point, I took to Twitter. I pointed out to the governor, because he's made some really comical mistakes during the pandemic. His All in Illinois website, which was meant to encourage people to stay indoors, was formerly a travel website, and all the travel links were originally up when he had it on there. So I did like this comical Microsoft Paint thing on Twitter, just saying like, get rid of this. And then like 2 or 3 days later, he got rid of it. So as far as I was concerned, this was an oversight of a similar caliber. This is ridiculous. How could you have utility shutoffs resume when our unemployment rate was still a lot higher than it was before, and when debt is through the roof for folks?
Yeah.
So I pointed it out on Twitter on July 11th or July 12th. But on July 12th, Ameren Illinois tweeted back at me directly saying, "Hi, Alan, we're going to be shutting off utilities on August 11th. And we'll be sending out the shutoff notices on July 29th. And that made it incredibly real and dire. I took a screenshot of it. I drafted up the explanation of where we had gotten from what information I had until that point. I sent an email to pretty much any organization I could think of that I had any contact information for or rapport with. And our initial meeting was of 8 organizations, mostly concentrated in my county of Champaign, Illinois. Uh-huh. And we were looking at this as, you know, this is an issue we want to take up. We have no idea how we're going to stop this. So what do we do? And we made an agreement that every organization that joins in the first phase would send an email to the mm-hmm. governor while mm-hmm. we also start planning actions together. That way, the act of recruitment actually is a mobilizing ask. Mm-hmm. Someone agrees to join us, and they've already done labor on behalf of the campaign when they've said yes. Mm-hmm. And so through that, we elicited a response from the lieutenant governor, who told us about a body of government we didn't even know about called the Illinois Commerce Commission. Hmm. Each state has a utility regulatory body whose commissioners are appointed by the governor. Hmm. These are non-elected officials in a lot of cases. In Georgia, for example, they elect theirs directly. These are unelected officials who are in an underfunded department, which means that for activists, it is a very good target, because underfunded office means that the really important people have to answer the phones too. And you can then dial up the intensity and therefore the inconvenience for the politicians while grabbing their ear and telling them your demands. And we threw 2 graphics up on Facebook and won 2 moratoria just from calling their phones.
So there's a lot to unpack here, but
yes,
one of the things that I am just, it seems illogical to me is you're a Democratic governor, and during the Trump administration, you see that there's a need to make people stay home because there's a pandemic. And because you're making people stay home from a pandemic, and a lot of them have lost their jobs, then of course they wouldn't be able to afford their utilities. So why aren't you putting up moratoriums? Why does this activist group have to push you to make a moratorium so that people, their utilities aren't shut off? Now, I, as somebody who has a chronic illness, I'm a dialysis patient, as many people know, I absolutely need to have power, especially if it gets extremely cold or it gets extremely hot. That's not good for my health. So you have many people in the state of Illinois who are going through this, and it doesn't jog your brain to go, maybe I should put a moratorium on this. And you can't say, oh, well, you know, somebody should do something about this. You're the governor. You have executive power to do this. Go ahead.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because he tried to claim, Governor Pritzker of Illinois tried to claim that he didn't have the executive power. And we were right there with the media telling them that's not true. Here's the state statute. Here's Kentucky that had used this power when Illinois did not. Here's New Jersey that used this power when Illinois did not. And so we got the governor fact-checked on it. Keep in mind, our governor is the richest politician in the country. He dethroned Donald Trump in his election of 2018 as the richest politician.
Are you kidding me? Wow.
And so when we look at the fact that this person was willing to make a bald-faced lie to the press, they fact-checked him. The stock prices for the utility corporations and one other, which we'll get to in a second, all tanked that the next day. And then after he didn't do anything, they went right back up to where they were. If there's anything to tell you that a governor is unaccountable, it's when he says something is not true and then he's found out and it significantly affects the wellness of his constituents. In Kentucky, I think it was, the governor had thought that there was a fraudulent claim from someone named Tupac when that was a real person. and made an apology for it. Meanwhile, our governor lied to the media, to all of us, that he could not help us, and instead pretended that it was the sole jurisdiction of the Illinois Commerce Commission, again, our utility regulatory body. So we started to look at his legal filings that he had to do to run. In a lot of states, you have to submit paperwork to show your statement of economic interest so that one could decide in the public if there is a conflict of interest on a particular issue.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out this particular governor inherited likely upwards of 24% of his wealth from a corporation that owns a utility company outright, two business partners of a water utility company outright, as well as water filtration for nuclear power plants, as well as both major rail lines in our state, which ship coals to our utility companies, and also the Marmon Group, which was the Pritzker family business sold in the early 2000s to Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway for over $13 billion, spread out across 11 Pritzker cousins, including Governor Pritzker. That's where we got the number of 24% of his wealth from the average transaction. He inherited that. And every single step of the utility fight, we saw the utility corporations and Berkshire Hathaway stock all fluctuate in the same way on dates that have nothing to do with financial quarters and completely to do with when the first moratorium was set to expire, when the second moratorium was set to expire, and when the fourth moratorium was won, and when he lied to the press. The reason the third moratorium didn't have any sort of significant response or reaction is because that was an agreement that allowed utility shutoffs to start. So this is just this massive thing where our governor has a financial conflict of interest, lied to the press, and hasn't been held accountable for it. But within a week of within a day of us bringing that information to light, Commonwealth Edison, one of the largest utilities in our state, owned by Exelon Corporation, stopped disconnections the next day. November 10th, we released a video on it, which was a double press release in collaboration with United Left. And November 11th, that's when they stopped utility shutoffs, Exelon did. But our target was Ameren. We didn't get Ameren to stop shutoffs until a full week later, after I was threatened by a state board member of our Illinois Revolution on November 14th in front of a witness. And after I told them to bring it on, and after we got follow-up reporting on our double press release by Caracal Reports on the 17th of November, and then on the 18th, that's when Ameren Illinois threw in the towel. And then a week after that is when all the other utilities followed suit in a voluntary agreement, all the other power utilities, to not shut off residents. And that's been what took us from tens of thousands of shutoffs a month to one in the power utility sector alone. Wow. And so, yeah, the thing though is it's not just that part of the fight that matters. Like, this is something that is essential for COVID safety. And because we hit on the governor's conflict of interest so upfront, I skipped over the entirety of what happened during that part of the fight, which is just it frustrating. Utility shutoffs in Illinois started on September 24th. October 7th was literally 2 weeks later, and we went up from, you know, a couple hundred to 1,000-ish cases a day to over 2,000 cases a day in 2 weeks. We found one county health department's caseload and positivity rate that shot right up within a week of utility shutoffs. And this is because people get the notices and then they're shut off. So we don't know when somebody decided to abandon their home and then house themselves with their families, or when they got a job on unsafe conditions and got sick because of it. But what we do know is that 3 weeks after utility shutoffs started on October 15th, we had over 3,000 cases a day, every day for over a month and a half. Within a month of utility shutoffs happening, we had over 4,000 cases a day that continued for a month. We had over 6,000 cases a day, 1 month and 4 days after utility shutoffs started. And that was on October 28th when that trend started. On October 29th, keep in mind, both of these dates are before the election and before Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
The governor gave a press conference where he admitted that since October 1st, we have had a 151% increase in our coronavirus cases, an 82% increase in the number of deaths, and over a 60% increase in the number of hospitalizations, in the number of people on ICUs, that is the intensive care unit, and the number of people on ventilators. So this showed in as undeniable terms as possible the direct impact of utility shutoffs on pandemic safety, which anybody who had Googled just for about 10 minutes on the matter would have stumbled across the Congressional Research Service's 2007 Pandemic Influenza and Analysis of State Preparedness and Response Plans, which included in Table 8 the continuity of public utility service.
Mm-hmm.
It also said don't go back to school until the pandemic recedes. And in Illinois, we've gone back to school when our caseload is higher and has been higher since last summer.
Oh gosh.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Okay. This is what happens when you follow the money. You know, it is inconceivable how you see the links between the conflict of interest and how it leads ultimately to people dying and getting sick because of these conflicts of interest. And it's, are you going to run for governor?
So what I would say on that front is I want a progressive candidate for governor who is not Governor Pritzker, because we cannot risk someone as unpopular as him running for governor in the general election. His flagship policy was called the Fair Tax. It was a progressive income tax under, you know, weird branding, but they called it the Fair Tax, which means the opposite of what it actually meant in Illinois. In another state, it might have been Georgia again, where they used it to actually say, let's have a flat tax. So the confusion notwithstanding, Governor J.B. Pritzker's Fair Tax arguably failed, ironically, because of utility shutoffs. If you look at the number of households, 81,000 households affected from September through November, 2.54 persons per household, that's over 200,000 people immediately affected. And if even half of them doubled up with other households in their families, that gets you to 300,000, which is the margin by which the Fair Tax constitutional amendment in Illinois, again, to adopt a progressive tax where the rich pay more and we give the lowest income Illinoisans a tax break, that was the margin by which it lost. And the governor was so alarmed by this that he and Senator Dick Durbin turned on our House Speaker, Michael Madigan, who I have no love for, the next week. And they led the effort rhetorically to remove our House Speaker from his position. And he is now replaced by our House Speaker, I think Chris Welch, who is actually helping us a lot. He had sponsored a bill to actually pay off people's rent and utility debt using federal money appropriated by the Trump administration through the Mitch McConnell Senate, which is just ironic. And there's a lot of really dumb stuff that's happened in that fight under the last legs of the Madigan House speakership. But the thing ultimately is, we had a Republican governor before Governor Pritzker. During that time, we had a budget crisis that was completely manufactured to where Republicans even started to rebel against their Republican governor. It was that outrageous. Our community in Champaign County lost our homeless shelter, privatized our nursing home that is one of the long was one of the longest running public nursing homes.
Wow.
Because of that budget crisis. And so if Governor Pritzker wins the primary in the Democratic election, then we're going to have to fight to elect Governor Pritzker despite all the things that he's done. And that's going to be an uphill battle that we've lost before with the fair tax. Mm-hmm. So the caveat for me is I'm looking for somebody to run for governor because we cannot have Governor Pritzker, because that is a path for us getting a Republican in the governor's mansion. I don't think that person can be me. Mm-hmm. I really don't, because when your own Democratic Party chair has accused you of QAnon conspiracy theories and it's in their meeting minutes, when your Democratic Party chair is adopting policies to try and protect electeds from activists rather than protecting activists and community members from electeds, mm-hmm. We know that if there is any sort of electoral effort centered around me, it's going to be one of these things that probably does a lot more damage than we could afford. We can be completely gloves off in our fight to protect Illinoisans, but we also have to recognize the hubris and lack of accountability that we have in Champaign County, Illinois. And that has to be addressed meaningfully. Otherwise, any candidate that's coming out of this county is going to have to deal with how they weaponize trauma, how they gaslight people, and all of these sorts of misinformation campaigns that they try to use to muddy the waters, which is a Hillary Clinton tactic, right?
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
So, you know, like I had been asked to run, for example, for Congress and said no, not because of the dynamics with the local Democratic Party, but because me running wouldn't mean anything. So I'm hoping that we find a gubernatorial candidate that is well-liked, well-known to run. I really don't think that that person can be me, because we have activists spread out throughout the state. That isn't a mass movement. That isn't a lot of popularity. It's not like we have every AFSCME union in every county of the state ready to endorse somebody.
Yeah.
And we also have to recognize how much money and elite capture we're dealing with. When we have a governor self-funding his campaign, who is a billionaire, he doesn't need these endorsements in order to have a large reach. So barring any sort of mass unified grassroots movement with a one-on-one campaign against Pritzker during the primary, we are likely to see him win again. There were five or six gubernatorial candidates in 2018 when he ran, and the closest anybody got was about 25% of the vote.
Wow.
And even if you combined the other gubernatorial candidates, they wouldn't reach Pritzker. He got an outright majority. Wow. And that's because he promised the Illinois Federation of Teachers a lot of positive change. He has made promises to the Lift the Ban on Rent Control Coalition. And it seems that in the 11th hour of his first term, they may actually pass that bill. So this is somebody who has made campaign promises, has wavered on some, been held accountable, and is going to do those things. How bad is it really if we just hold this person accountable and get him elected if he's the one who makes it through the primary versus running a campaign that would basically be nothing but just reading his receipts time and time again, to where that may not sway voters, but it will lose him support. And so that is something that we have to offer more than the receipts in terms of being able to mount a reasonable challenge to the governor, because each Democratic Party across the state is going to weigh in. They all have a reasonable power of the purse where they're going to be able to send out mailers on his behalf. Yeah. In addition to the fact, you know, so it's very frustratingly complex. But the thing is that this is somebody that will throw activists out using the National Guard one week, and then through public pressure the next week will allow the activists into the press conference and let them talk to him. he is pressurable. Mm-hmm. And so if there is somebody to run against him who is a progressive or further left in the gubernatorial primary, I'm going to fully support that person and I'm going to read out the receipts because that campaign is going to be really helpful and necessary. Mm-hmm. And I would encourage the organizations that I have worked with to consider what we had all gone through and what we could have instead. Mm-hmm. But there is sort of this disorganizing aspect when an organizer tries to become a candidate.
Yeah.
In that, oh, you are all doing that for you. And there's also the other aspect of there is a lot of people are used to large metropolitan city organizing. And in that place, somebody runs for office, great. There are 14 other hardcore activists who will be able to pick up their slack. Mm-hmm. That isn't the case in small towns and rural areas.
True.
So the most powerful thing that can be done right now, at least in the area that I live in, is to train activists to recognize domestic violence. I literally presented that to the local DSA this past Sunday, where it was a presentation entitled Domestic Violence in Community and Organizing Spaces. And that has been the single most useful political education for me to identify when there is dishonest or gaslighting conduct so that one can meaningfully address it in good faith, mm-hmm. and then see whether or not the interactions happened in good faith or if it was subversive. Case in point, going back to our Illinois revolution, they had a person who had sabotaged our press release, sabotaged our graphics, threatened me in front of a witness, and on top of that, engaged in a pattern of psychological abuse of more than a dozen other activists spanning 8 years.
Wow.
Who, the moment that the word grievance was brought up by somebody she knew, she went on the attack. So when we have people like that, if folks don't have the basic framework to understand what that person's doing, how that actually can be held accountable, they will have the same thing happen to them that the cohort of over 20 activists spanning 8 years that I have been put in contact with, who couldn't trust anybody, almost left activism altogether, and felt extremely alienated and scared. Mm-hmm. And so now with this amassing group, we're able to form a coalition agreement where we can ensure that there will be a grievance process so that if our Illinois revolution wants to claim to be part of a progressive movement and enter into, say, a coalition agreement, they're going to have to agree to put to have a third party hold them accountable and be transparently documented.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, there's that kind of stuff that we have to work on too. I wish that I could say that I'd run for governor just because it'd be like this really cool thing of an activist group across all these different things. But these activist groups are doing low threshold, high reward asks at sporadic intervals that as a coalition results in us doing constant action. It's not the same as the amount of effort that is needed for an electoral win.
Got it. Thank you for that answer. You know, reflecting on the points that you brought out about Governor Pritzker, he sounds like a Bloomberg-esque kind of person, being extremely rich, being very manipulative as far as what he does electorally regarding activists, and making it kind of seem like, oh, I'm down with the activists. But then, you know, when they try to get concessions out of them, then it's like, okay, let me send a National Guard, you know, after them.
Well, so the main thing is, one, Governor Pritzker is richer than Bloomberg. So that's the first part.
Of course. yeah.
The second part is that the governor is, you know, like, I wouldn't claim to say that he's a great person. But what I will say is that with the unaccountable culture that exists at the local level and only gets worse as you scale up, there is something to be said for any disruption to that dynamic. Mm-hmm. And that is not to say that it's a great idea to have a hyper-capitalist in charge of our government. but it does, despite all of his conflicts of interest, he has less baggage than the average state senator when it comes to who they're going to attack and why. Who do they want to keep silent because otherwise this bad thing's going to happen? Like, when there is an activist with who, I'm not going to say the name of the organization, they operated in good faith, but this activist had an action to go to Senator Dick Durbin's home and to protest his home regarding a pandemic concession that he wanted to see at the federal level. He has a conversation with Senator Durbin. He videotapes it. He puts it up on his YouTube. He comes back to Champaign County, goes to the Champaign County Anti-Racist Coalition, sends an email to the entire group accusing me of being a cop. So when we look at the kinds of things that happen when dealing with Pritzker, where I've literally occupied this person's office and not been arrested, I was zip tied to a grandmother's walker and to a couple other members of the Lift the Ban Coalition in 2019, not arrested. That is an arrestable action. Governor Rauner, the Republican before him, arrested folks when that happened and also pushed some folks around. Same security detail, different governor, right? And meanwhile, helped someone run for Congress, inconvenienced Senator Durbin when one of his lieutenants tried to run for Congress because there was someone more preferable to that candidate who was not willing to assimilate. And then his candidate ends up losing by a larger margin than when that person had last run in 2018 against our Republican state representative. And I had called that election with the highest accuracy of what the margin was going to be in January of 2020, because it was so predictable how that kind of race would go. It was the Trump bump. Anyway, I've never had someone try to go after me like Senator Durbin may have. And Governor Pritzker is definitely capable of that kind of stuff and hasn't done it. Meanwhile, activist goes to the bar in Springfield, has a drink with a Senator Durbin staffer, mentions my name, and the person like rolls their eyes and groans. And I get sent a dispatch about that kind of stuff. Like, these are the kinds of folks that we're dealing with at the local level and at the federal level, because it only gets worse. Meanwhile, somebody who hasn't fit into that spectrum throws in a lot of money and becomes governor. So it's not great. It'd be better to have somebody who's more accountable to the people with a massive grassroots movement, but we don't have one. So it's either giant political machine or giant corporate machine spits out who your governor is going to be. And right now it's the giant corporate machine, which has done a lot of business-friendly policies that also had social justice veneer. Legalizing cannabis, for example. Being the first state to eliminate cash bail is another example. And so these are genuinely good policies that probably would not have happened if the political machine spat out a politician. That is not to say that it is preferable. It's just to understand where it comes from and how we get these concessions. But when it comes to Governor Pritzker as a whole and how he compares to Mike Bloomberg, he never did stop and frisk. I believe that that was a Bloomberg policy, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was a Bloomberg policy. Yeah. It's there's actually kind of a segue. You have Black Lives Matter over your shoulder, and I know you've done some activism for Black Lives Matter as well. And I would kind of like to intersect the No Amron shutoffs with how it affects especially the Black community, because as we all know, when you know, pretty much the largest city in Illinois is Chicago. And a lot of people, you know, they have a huge, you know, Black population there. I'm not sure if you would have a story that relates to this, but is there any particular story of any particular family or, you know, person that you've experienced with your activism kind of intersecting with No Amron shutoffs?
Yeah. So I'll get to the anecdotal in a second, because that is something where there is a real human connection there. There are people that are struggling and we got consent to share their stories. But there was a report, I think by Washington Post, I could be wrong, that in Northern Illinois, inclusive of Chicago, zip codes that were majority non-white, were 4 times more likely than zip codes that were majority white to be shut off. When it comes to the intersection of no Ameren shutoffs and fighting for Black lives, that is an empirical thing that we can put forward.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. On top of that, when it comes to the anecdotes, we have had an activist affiliated with the campaign bring a single mom of 2 kids with a third on the way onto the radio locally to share her story about her water being shut off. Mm. And the person sheltering that that mother caught COVID.
Oh, no.
Right? Oh, like, it basically was an encapsulated version of exactly the mechanism of utility shutoffs that we're trying to avoid. And the first person that I ever got an anecdote from, I won't use her name. She consented to be named in an open letter, but I won't say her name without consent there, but I can tell you what she said.
Of course.
We asked her how utility shutoffs affected her just because, like, we're like, this is terrible. We're sorry that this happened. We have no idea of the depth of the experience or anything like that. What can you tell us? And so when we asked, how have utility shutoffs affected you? Her reply was simple. I had to separate and give away my children. And that just blew us away because that wasn't anywhere on our radar. How does this cause child separation? What's going on here? And the reality is that the Department of Child and Family Services will intervene if your utilities are off for longer than a duration. I think it's 2 weeks. And so for this mom to avoid losing her kids, she had to rehouse her kids with someone else. So when we're talking about family separation and how that's bad, shame on you, Trump, for causing family separation. Here we are with Governor Pritzker having the ability to intervene in this situation and not, and it caused child separation for families.
Oh, gosh.
And that's just the really frustrating thing about it is that one story that The Intercept did that included us in it was about how, in addition to the fact that Governor Pritzker did not respond to the request for comment, which was very interesting, we Streisand affect him anytime he does something really over the top like that, and that causes enough pain for him to be held accountable again. But it specifically included the quote that utility shutoffs are a way of dehousing someone without an eviction. So thank you, federal government, for extending our means-tested eviction moratorium through the end of June. But in Illinois, if utility shutoffs are allowed to resume next week, people are going to get dehoused anyway, and our caseloads are going to go up again.
As somebody that knows what it's like to be evicted, that I'm choosing my words very carefully because I don't want algorithms to mess with this broadcast, but shame on them. I just want to, for the audience, to really think about, go an entire day without having any water usage at all, to wash your hands, to use the bathroom, to take a shower, to wash dishes, anything, and see how difficult your life is without it. And now to have, for instance, a mother, single mother with 2 kids and one more on the way, and have no water, and then to have to rehouse them, give them up, so to speak, so that she won't lose them to the state, when you knowingly have a governor that can prevent all this from happening. This just reiterates the oppressive system that we have, that we need to have change. And I just want to thank you for the work that you've been doing. You know,
we shouldn't have had to do it, but thank you.
Yeah. And I don't like that this has to be done. I wish that this situation was a lot more different. But given the circumstance, I am definitely grateful. I'm still floored. I can't even ask my next question. So who do we need to contact to get in this fight, and how can we help?
So there are several caveats to that. If you live outside of the state and want to first off fight your utility service, like, we will make someone in the campaign available to meet with you to get that ball rolling. It doesn't matter how long it's been since the utility moratorium in your state has lapsed. This is something that is putting people into unsafe conditions.
Yes.
And you can help thousands of people, tens of thousands of people that you will never meet, if you get your state legislature to unlock the federal funds made available in the 2021 Appropriations Act from the Trump and McConnell, you know, cabal, where it won't affect the state budget at all, and it will help relieve rent and utility debt. So if you have a state legislator you can pressure, if you have the Utility Service Commission to talk to, that is something that we encourage that people do. If you want to help from outside the state in Illinois, one of the things that you can do is call the Illinois Commerce Commission. That is our state utility regulatory body. It is their plan to reopen the utility services. It is their plan to resume utility shutoffs. Their number to call if you are available during central time business hours is 1-800-524-0795. So again, 1-800-524-0795. And all you have to say to them is, I don't want you to resume utility shutoffs. That's all you have to say. You don't have to say, I want to file an informal complaint under docket number, whatever. Just say that. It's totally fine. And we, if you are in Illinois, the people to contact is literally any member organization of No Admin Shutoffs. We have an online roster that can be made available. Just search the hashtag No Admin Shutoffs and you will find member organizations tweeting about it. We purposefully have not tried to get it trending so that people could find us effectively. And so on top of that, you can just contact me. I will go as far as I can to respond to folks. So message me on Twitter. I check my other inbox and message requests. If you are on Facebook, it's the same handle. You type in 213 Axelrod and you will find me. Caveat, of course, not related to David. I posted my family tree online. If he were, I'd go to every Thanksgiving to make his life miserable.
Got it. Well, I mean, this has been some extremely valuable information. And I'm hoping that this goes viral so that more people are not only aware of what's going on, but how they can help, not just in the state of Illinois, but throughout the entire country, because this is a humanitarian issue that must be addressed. And I, as someone who has experienced utility shutoffs, either from financially not being able to afford it or just from shutoffs from varying circumstances. And so I know exactly what that's like. And to have it because of circumstances that are out of your control, like a pandemic, and then being treated as if it's your fault, is something that I think we need to rectify this immediately. And it can only be done through people power and doing, you know, the same type of activism that you're doing. And I just want to thank you for that.
Thank you, James. And one of the things that I think is really important to mention that not a lot of people think about, the most state governments have probably pointed to the low-income home energy assistance program one. Yeah, they've probably pointed to that as that's what you do to get help. Just apply for that and you'll be fine. In Illinois, we had in fiscal year 2019, 236,000 and change people on LIHEAP. That is about less than a third of the number of households that were even eligible, firstly. Now, on top of that, economic crisis, larger number of people undoubtedly eligible. Yet 70,000 less people are on that program in Illinois from the government's own press release. Over 160,000 as of 2 weeks ago from the government's own press release. That is almost a third less number of people signed up for the low-income home energy assistance program LIHEAP after the government made specific efforts to try and increase enrollment, after we canvassed our community to desperately sign people up for LIHEAP when utility shutoffs were happening, because that was the only way to make it stop. 70,000 less. And undoubtedly, that is the case in everybody's state. And what a lot of people don't know is that is a seasonal benefit. At the end of April, it goes away. So that is money that is sitting on the table that can help a lot. But also, there is no clearer condemnation of our means-tested social safety net than during a pandemic when the need is greatest, there was almost a third less people who received it. When the state government increased the total budget by 49% due to the pandemic. That's how severe things have gotten, and that's how underprepared our government was to respond to this, with all their hand-waving, with all of their redirections of you should do this disagreement, with their blatant lies to the media. And that's why when the governor does a press conference anywhere in the state, we send people out. We had people disrupt his press conference in Urbana. We had press give him a question that he then lied to in Champaign in front of many public officials who we then twisted their arms to get them to sign an open letter decrying that effectively. We had folks in Normal disrupt his press conference. We had folks in Decatur try to disrupt his press conference. We had folks in Springfield get tossed out by the National Guard trying to get into his press conference. We had folks in Belleville sneak into his press conference. And we had folks in Pembroke Township sneak into Governor Pritzker's press conference and even ask the guy a question. This is all across Illinois that we are doing these kinds of things, because we're using any and every tactic that we can afford to on a $0 campaign budget to move that needle and to get a fifth moratorium in time. And so that's why we have signed up so far more than 11 organizations and counting, and we're still talking with our member organizations to find someone available to speak to the Illinois Commerce Commission at their Thursday open meeting, where we're going to have folks demand that they not resume utility shutoffs, that they publish something to show that they disagree with this, given just how all the metrics tell us that this is the wrong thing to do. We're only at 1 in 3 house or 1 in 3 Illinoisans above the age of 16 fully vaccinated. And those folks who are vaccinated are the folks whose wellness is in such a state where they are maintaining regular appointments, where they will go to someplace and sign up, where they are checking for this kind of correspondence. Meanwhile, we have canvassed homes that were due to be shut off, that have received, at least on paper, shut off notices that didn't even know they were going to be shut off the next day. So the folks that are going to be most egregiously affected may not even know that it's happening until it's too late. The social service departments, such as the one in Peoria, which is where a national media outlet person that was talking to us had said the social service agency didn't know anybody who had been shut off. Wow. That's due to their separation at class-wise, cultural-wise, but also because of mandatory reporting requirements of social service agencies that could cause the Department of Child and Family Services to get involved. Mm. So our government is going to be flying completely blind, because the reason that we were able to canvass households that were going to be shut off this past fall is because our Public Utilities Act requires that if a public health district for a county requests utility shutoff notices from a power utility, they will get it. They have to. In April, that requirement goes away. And from our water utilities that have not been under that requirement at all, they have refused our public health administrator's request for utility shutoffs. So for anybody who is of a libertarian bent that says that we don't need to have private services, or we don't need to have public services for everything, the private companies can do so on a leaner dollar margin, mythically, let's say, they are refusing to share critical safety information with another unit of government. If it was municipal, they would share that information. And also it would be public information that they could request through a privileged FOIA, a Freedom of Information Act request. Mm-hmm. So, and this is where Illinois American Water had a 48% increase in their profits per share at the last fiscal quarter. Mm-hmm. That's our water utility in Champaign-Urbana. And our Ameren, Illinois had a 4% increase in profits per share and has been profitable the entire way through. Exelon Corporation, profitable the entire way through, and with some quarters where they saw an increase in their profits per share too. There is no profit-based reason to want to preserve their ability to shut people off. It is them maximizing profits over the bodies of our residents and our billionaire governor letting them do it.
This is a call to action to save lives, absolutely. Alan Axelrod, I like to thank you for being with us. He's the campaign lead of No Ameren Shutoffs, and he's also the co-chair of the Chambana DSA. I leave the last word to you. Thank you so much.
You will never feel like you're going to get the win. Persistence is what ultimately will win the day. Persistence and escalation.
Exactly. Thank you very much.